Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. A son who acts by anticipating what his father wants him to do is first class. One who acts upon receiving his father's order is second class, and one who executes his father's order irreverently is third class. But a son who refuses his father's order is like his father's stool. Purport. Puru, Yayati's last son, immediately accepted his father's proposal, for although he was the youngest, he was very qualified. Puru thought, I should have accepted my father's proposal before he asked, but I didn't. Therefore, I'm not a first-class son, I'm second-class, but I do not wish to become the lowest type of son who is compared to his father's stool. One Indian poet has spoken of Putra and Mutra. Putra means son and Mutra means urine. Both a son and urine come from the same genitals. If a son is an obedient devotee of the Lord, he is called Putra, or a real son. Otherwise, if he is not learned and is not a devotee, a son is nothing better than urine. Uttamas chintitam kuryat proktakarit madhyamaha adhamosh adaya kuryat akarta charitam pitu. A son who acts by anticipating what his father wants him to do is first class. One who acts upon receiving his father's order is second class, and one who executes his father's order irreverently is third class. But a son who refuses his father's order is like his father's stool. So these are the words of Puru, the youngest son of Yayati Maharaj. As we know from Bhagavatam, he was one of the emperors who ruled the whole world. So great personality. Nevertheless, he had a weakness for the opposite sex. It says that, you know, the women are generally considered to be the weaker or weak sex or weak gender, and males are considered to be the strong sex. But then it says that the strong gender is actually weaker than the weak gender because of their weakness for the weak gender. Right? I hope everyone caught that. So this is the trick of the material nature. And so that men are thinking they are ruling the world, but women know who actually is ruling the world. And so Yayati Maharaj was caught by that weakness, particular weakness, desire to enjoy. Nevertheless, as we will learn from the upcoming verses, he achieved perfection despite of his weakness. And this is the power of devotional service, that we can become purified from all our anarthas, even the biggest ones. And so, because of that weakness, he was asking his sons, and actually even daughters, to give him their youth so that he would be able to enjoy the pleasure of the association with the opposite sex for longer. And his argument actually, sometimes when we hear about weaknesses of great people, we have this tendency to judge, right? That means they were not so great. But actually, this tendency to judge or being judgmental It's an interesting word, judgmental, right? Judgmental means mental judge. That in my mind means in my mind I elevated myself to the position of the judge, and from that position I'm judging other people, right? No one really gave me the position. And so it's a very unsteady position from which one falls down. And actually, this is why Lord Jesus Christ, whom Srila Prabhupada mentioned as one of our gurus, said, do not judge and you won't be judged. And so, yeah, we have this tendency to judge great devotees due to their weaknesses, which they sometimes display. Even in Bhagavatam we see those examples, and King Yayati is one of those examples. Nevertheless, it's worth noting that King Yayati achieved perfection, unlike many of us. And so, rather than looking at his weaknesses, it's worth analyzing why he still achieved perfection despite of his weaknesses. And we can see that the quality he displays in here, actually he displays two very amazing virtues. That first of all, he is honest, even with his children. And second of all, he is very humble. Despite of being the emperor of the whole planet, right? He could just say, you know, to his kids, you know, I produced you, so your life is in my hands, so you have to give me your youth, because I am the emperor and you have to obey, you have to follow my order, right? He had the right to do so. Nevertheless, he is very humbly approaching his children. I mean, to humble yourself before your child is quite an accomplishment in itself. And so he displays that humility, which is very important quality for spiritual advancement. This is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically highlights the third verse of Shikshashtakam. Trinadapi sunichana taro rapi sahishnuna amanina manadana kirtaniya sanahari. That it is by tolerance, humility and respect we can acquire the qualification to always chant the holy names of the Lord. And therefore, Yayati, at the end, achieved perfection. And we can see that even though he is very honest and very humble, and he openly expresses his need to his children, not all the children responded positively. Only one, the youngest son, Puru, decided to fulfill his father's desire. And this verse is very interesting because he speaks about three categories of sons. And we can understand that these categories have much broader application than just children. Uttama, Madhyama, and Adhama, right? Uttama means the topmost, Madhyama means mediocre, and Adhama means the lowest. So we know that there are also three types of devotees: Uttama, Madhyama, and Kanishta. And there are also three modes of nature, and we can very easily connect the three levels with three modes of nature. And we know that Srila Prabhupada and previous acharyas also were taught talking about three types of disciples. Which is quite obvious that there are so many disciples of genuine Vaishnava gurus, but not all of them have the same level of consciousness. That many have desire to enjoy in exchange for their devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada and previous acharyas were calling such disciples guru bhogi, one who wants to enjoy his guru or his guru's whatever possessions, or his guru's fame or his guru's position, whatever, you know. Then there is another type of disciple who is called Guru Tyagi. You know, Tyaga or renunciation is very important for spiritual advancement, but it has to be applied properly. But some, a very interesting example of wrong application when one renounces his guru's orders. That's a wrong renunciation, and so this is the lowest type of disciple, one who refuses to follow the order of a spiritual master. And of course, the best example, the best category of a disciple is Guru Sevi, one who is focused on serving his spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada also explains that even better than that category, the topmost category of a disciple, one who serves his spiritual master without waiting for the order, right? One who anticipates, one who understands the mind of his spiritual master or her spiritual master. This is why we sing every morning. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chittate Koriya Aikya Arana Koriho Mane Asha. Let the words coming from the lotus mouth of my spiritual master become one with my heart, and let there be nothing else in the heart. And we can see the principle behind this story, and it's very important to, as they say, to see the forest behind the trees. So we can say that each episode described in Bhagavatam is like a tree, but we're supposed to see the bigger picture behind the principles of Krishna consciousness, which is like a forest, spiritual forest, Vrindavan. So we should see Vrindavan behind each description of Srimad Bhagavatam and understand the path. How can we get there? And so the entire episode is very interesting because we can see all the examples, well, almost all the examples of what Puru is speaking here, all types of sons. Because previously, the first ones Yayati approached were Turvasu, Druyu, and Anu. And so they all refused to fulfill the father's desire. They all said, you know, like, we need our youth for ourselves to enjoy. You're not the only one who wants to enjoy here. So we can see that this example of Bhoga Tyaga, right, very clearly that when you know, I'm getting the benefits, my relationship with the Father are good, but when I have to serve Him, I have to sacrifice something, then, you know, give it up. I'm not interested. And so, but then the other example, King Yadu, he also refused to give his youth, but then it's explained that his motivation was actually Krishna conscious, because he knew that Krishna is supposed to appear as one of his descendants, and he didn't want to delay that appearance of the Lord, and so he wanted to use his youth not for his sense gratification, but for devotional service, and that's why he refused. So we can say that this example is, I mean, acharyas are explaining that this example is above goodness. It's transcendental. So we can say that even though it didn't look like that, but King Yadu's example was transcendental. And then Puru is the example of someone who is in the mode of goodness, and he decided to serve his father by sacrificing his youth for fulfillment of his desire, and we can see that this sacrifice didn't go in vain. That later we will learn that first of all, Maharaj Yayati install, you know, he gave the he gave the position of an emperor to Puru, even though he was youngest, and so he didn't have the hereditary right to become an emperor, but Yayati Maharaj gave him that right, and plus he got his youth back as well, so he haven't lost anything. So this is an important principle, probably the first and foremost principle in Krishna consciousness, and that is the principle of sacrifice. This is where Bhagavad Gita starts from, that the beginning of elaboration on Bhagavad Gita, which is third chapter, starts with explaining this principle of sacrifice. We know that in human life, there are three most important principles, which are yagya, dana, and tapa, right? Sacrifice, charity, and austerity. And so, you know, if you sacrifice, you'll get all the benefits. It's very funny in the material world. Whatever we hold on to, we're going to be losing that. That will be the source of our misery. But if we sacrifice something, this is from where we will get all the benefits. And so all the benefits coming from sacrifice, from yagya, are actually meant for dana. It's very interesting, Vedic culture, right? That you do the sacrifice, you get the benefit, but then you distribute the benefit. And then you may ask, so what's in there for me? Tapa. Austerity. This is what you can hold on to. But actually, if you do it for the right purpose, you'll be happy. Because you'll please the Supreme Lord, you'll please the spiritual master, you'll please Vaishnavas. And so this principle of Tushti Krishna Jagat Tushtam will be active. And then, if you are happy, what else do you want in your life? Because people strive for so many things just to be happy. Like King Yayati was striving for so many things, I mean, to enjoy, because he thought this will make him happy, right? And he tried for so long, and he became very old. So I guess in this sense, he's an example of the principle that it's easier to become old than wise. So, there is no happiness. Materially, there is no happiness in this material world, no matter how much we try. But if we follow the system which is described in Vedas, then this is the path of real happiness. Because this is the path of real love, developing our love towards the Supreme Lord. And so, therefore, the sacrifice is the most important principle in human life. We can say that, you know, there are many differences between humans and animals. One, of course, is acquiring knowledge, especially spiritual knowledge, but this knowledge is meant for sacrifice, actually. And so we can say that this is the most important difference between human life and animal life, is that consciously follow the principle of sacrifice in your life, not to live for your own sake. For the sake of others, this is mode of goodness, and for the sake of pleasing the Supreme Lord, which is the Shuddha Sattva. And it's important to see that Shuddha Sattva or transcendence can only stand on the platform of goodness. It cannot stand on its own. Therefore, cultural aspect is very important for application. And we can see that the whole Vedic culture is culture of respect. And this is what Puru is exemplifying here. He has great respect towards his father. And he understands, yes, my father have done so much for me. So now he is asking something from me. So I'll have to sacrifice that for his pleasure. So he follows the culture. And even in modern society, you know, there are so many people who are teaching self-help courses, and one of the major elements of those self-help courses is what they call attitude of gratitude. Yeah, and one of my favorite quotes from Srila Radhanath Maharaj is, bhakti can be born only in grateful heart. So gratitude is very important, and we can see that Puru showed his gratitude towards his father, and naturally he was benefited beyond his expectations from his father and also from the Supreme Lord. And we can see that only those people who live for sacrifice, right? And we're talking about sacrifice not as a mere religious ritual, but as a principle, guiding principle in human life. Those who live for the sake of sacrifice, these are the most celebrated personalities in amongst all. And we can see that these are really impressive examples, right? That if we want to really impress others, and that's, you know, we may try to impress others with our words, with how do we look, and with how do we do things. But if you've noticed, those who are trying very hard to impress others, you know, others are not really impressed. But the impressive examples are examples of sacrifice. If someone is living the life of sacrifice, that's really standing out. And luckily we have so many examples even today in the modern world. Luckily this culture of sacrifice is still alive to a certain extent. We can see some examples of sacrifice in goodness for the sake of others. I mean, Bhagavatam is full of those examples. Like Dadichi Muni, he sacrificed his own body for the sake of benefiting the demigods. and he understood this was also the desire of the Lord. And there are so many other examples. And there are some cultures where this, you know, mentality or attitude of sacrifice is still alive. And one such culture, of course, India is one example, but it's transcendental. People are sacrificing for the Supreme Lord. But another example, which is very interesting, is Japan. Especially at the times of tragedies, you know, the real nature of people tends to come out because people cannot just play their roles, right? They have to be themselves. And so during the last earthquake and resulting tsunami, when so many people have died and so many buildings were destroyed, and they're still struggling with the consequences of that. It was very interesting that there was a video clip caught by the surveillance camera on the highway, and it showed that, you know, the tsunami was coming from behind and the cars were going forward, and the tsunami was catching up with the cars which were behind. But the most amazing thing was that no one was breaking the speed limit. That people were dying, but they would not overtake the cars in front of them, even though they could easily do so. And it was done not just because Japanese were so dull that they couldn't figure it out, you know, but because they understood one thing. If I start doing that, everyone will start doing that, and we'll all get in a jam, and we'll all die. So better I sacrifice my life, but let those in front get their chance to escape. Right? So that's their mentality. This is how they trained from childhood. Sacrifice yourself for others. And after the earthquake, there was shortage of, you know, food supply, bread, and there were long queues just to buy a loaf of bread. And it was limited one loaf per person. And so there was a young boy standing in front of the queue. He got his loaf of bread. And at the very back of the queue, there was an old man. It was quite obvious that he won't get anything. So the young boy goes to the back of the queue, hands over his loaf of bread to the old man, and walks away. So there are so many examples. And so this is mode of goodness, and it really impresses because we don't see so many examples nowadays. And if this training, if this mentality is applied in the service of the Lord, then it becomes perfect. And we can see so many wonderful examples in even amongst ISKCON devotees. Readiness to sacrifice whatever is required out of respect, out of gratitude towards those who are elders in our society. And one outstanding example is Gopinath Prabhu from ISKCON Chaupati, who sacrificed his liver for Shyamasundara Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple. And it's not an easy thing. I mean, it's not that Gopinath Prabhu suddenly decided, okay, you know, let me just distribute my organs. Okay, somebody needs a liver, maybe somebody needs my spleen, okay, I still have kidneys left, anyone's interested. It was not like that. I mean, it's not easy for anyone, but he've done that. First of all, because his spiritual master wanted his disciples to Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Because his spiritual master was encouraging devotees to do so. And second of all, because yes, he wanted to do something for this great soul, Shyama Sundara Prabhu, who served Prabhupada personally for such a long time, and who himself sacrificed so much for Srila Prabhupada. And so, no doubt that if someone does anything like that, you know, the rewards from Krishna, from the spiritual master and Vaishnavas will be unlimited. And this is how one achieves real greatness, through the sacrifice. And the opposite type of mentality, which, you know, Puru also condemns here, he says that if someone doesn't have that mentality and doesn't want to execute his father's order, refuses to execute his father's or guru's or elder's order, that person becomes adhama. Adhama, we know what dhamma means, right? Dhamma means the best place to be, holy place. Adhama means, you know, you have no place, right? You are misplaced, right? So completely useless. And so one becomes completely useless in that sense when one wants to enjoy. And so important thing is that to remember when everything comes our way, we are in a wrong lane, right? So, and we cannot get even material benefits from this desire to enjoy at the cost of others. Like there was a story about one man who was very materialistic. And, you know, materialistic means very pragmatic and, you know, one who ignores all these traditions and culture as something very impractical. And so he happened to live in a kingdom where the king was also very materialistic and very pragmatic. And so the king issued a decree. He said, you know, old people in the kingdom, they are completely useless because they cannot produce any, you know, goods in life, right? They cannot work anymore, and so there is no point of maintaining them. So all the subjects have to take all old people, you know, like parents, grandparents, and just take them to the forest and let, you know, them leave their bodies there. And so this man, when he heard the king's decree, he had his elderly father, who was very sick and required a lot of care. And he thought, yeah, you know, why should I spend so much time and energy caring for my father? You know, yes, it's very practical. Let me take him to the forest. And so he put his father on the cart. I guess the analogy of a wheelchair, but they didn't have wheelchairs at that time. So he put his father on the cart and he started, you know, pushing his father towards the forest. But then his son, he also wanted to come alone. And then when they came to the forest, and this man, he just put the cart with the father under the tree, And even though he was thinking, you know, it's all right, but still in the heart he was not very happy with that. And so he had that heavy feeling in his heart. And when he turned around to leave and go home, you know, his son started pulling him by the cloth and saying, "Father, could you please, you know, we're leaving the grandfather here in the forest, but could you please take the cart home?" And the father was saying, you know, "Come on, forget it, you know. Why do you need this cart? Let it stay here." And the son said, no. You see, you will grow old, and then when I will be taking you to the forest, I wouldn't have to make another cart. I could use the same cart." And then the father, you know, got a little bit enlightened. He realized what's going on, you know, that if he treats his father this way, you know, his son is already like ready to treat him in this way. In Russia they say that the apple will not fall very far from the apple tree, right? Like father, like the son. And then he realized, oh my God, it's really dangerous. And then he said, "You know, Sonny, we were not really planning to leave your grandfather here in the forest. We just took him to the walk just to have some fresh air. So we'll be taking him back home now. You know, it's not a good idea to leave your father in the forest. Don't ever think like that." So, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, this is how it works in the material world. The more we want to enjoy, it becomes a recipe for disaster for us. We become, as Prabhupada was saying, that people, they say that man is the architect of his own fortune, but in most cases we see that the man is an architect of his own misfortune, unfortunately. Many people act in such a way that they bring trouble upon themselves by this desire to enjoy it. And so, therefore, it's really important for us to learn these things and get inspiration from the greatest examples of those devotees who lived the life of sacrifice, such as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose disappearance day anniversary we're celebrating today. And what is the cause of celebration? Of course, for us, it's sad that we don't have an association with such a great soul, but we celebrate his return to the kingdom of God, to the spiritual world. And also Gadadhar Pandit, one of the members of Panchatattva. And we can see that their whole lives were examples of great sacrifice. One of the episodes in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, as it was mentioned in the morning, he was one part of his mission was to expose false incarnations, and probably the most prominent example was so-called Bibhishan, who was posing himself as incarnation of Mahavishnu, and he was inviting women, young women, for a rasa dance with him. And he was a very powerful yogi with very long hair, and he had some mystical powers. And this is how he was impressing people and making everyone think that he is the Supreme Lord. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was exposing him. You know, everybody was worshipping him, but then Bhaktivinoda Thakur challenged him and he said, "You cannot do this, stop this." And the man didn't want to, you know, follow the order that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the city magistrate at the time. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to imprison the man. But he used his mystic powers to cause Bhaktivinoda Thakur together with his family to have very high fever, and actually many other devotees were advising Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, it's really dangerous to deal with this man, he is too powerful, better to leave him alone. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, no way. And he was really sick, he was on the verge of death. But because he had very strong faith in the chanting of the holy name and in Srimad Bhagavatam, he was reciting Bhagavatam and chanting the holy name without sleeping all night long. And at the end, this man died in jail, because when you send a curse to someone who is qualified, he is unaffected by the curse, but then the curse comes back to you again and kills you. So this is what happened to this yogi. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was ready. Okay, if Krishna wants me to die, I'll die. But I'll never, give up. I'll continue. Because this is my mission. I don't want people to be bewildered, to think that this man is God. He is not. And so we can see that his whole life was the life of sacrifice. He sacrificed his high position just because he wanted to be, you know, like when he wanted to move to Navadvip to continue his research on Lord Chaitanya. And when he was not allowed by his boss, he said, then I'll leave the job, I'm not interested. But because they wanted him to do the job, they agreed to transfer him to Navadvip. So he continued with his job. And anyone who knows his daily schedule, can see that he was sacrificing his sleep and everything else for the sake of firmly establishing the mission, the fruits of which we're enjoying today, because, you know, all these great souls have done so much to establish the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on a very firm grounds in terms of knowledge and culture and everything else. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also the original organizer of Namahata and what we call today Bhakti Vriksha program, which is helping to expand the movement very rapidly. And Gadadhar Pandit, of course, he is considered to be the incarnation of Srimati Radharani, and as the topmost gopi, Srimati Radharani is ready to sacrifice everything for Krishna's pleasure. And what is the topmost achievement in this world? It's fame, name and fame. And so we can see in Gadadhar Pandit's example that, you know, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for one who had honor, dishonor is worse than death, right? That some people, I mean, for many people, they would rather die than lose their, reputation, yeah, thank you. You know, it's easier to die than lose reputation. And then what is the reputation, what is the topmost reputation amongst Brahmanas and Vaishnavas? Honesty, right? If someone is dishonest, if someone is not, following his vows, then that's it. And we can see that gopis were ready to sacrifice their reputation in terms of following the marriage vows to be defined as, you know, unchaste wives, but they were ready to do so for Krishna. And so Gadadhar Pandit, as it was mentioned this morning, he was worshipping Tota Gopinath Diti, and he gave a vow of Kshetra Sannyas, that he will never leave Jagannath Puri. Purushottama Kshetra, he will continue worshipping Tota Gopinath there. And when Lord Chaitanya was leaving Jagannath Puri to go for a pilgrimage, the other Pandit, because he was so much attached to Lord Chaitanya, he said, I'm coming with you. And Lord Chaitanya said, you cannot do that. You gave a vow of Kshetra Sannyas, to which Gadadhar Pandit said, I don't care about the vow, you know, I'll break it. And Lord Chaitanya couldn't talk him out. And Gadadhar Pandit just followed him all the way until they crossed the border of Purushottam Kshetra. And then Lord Chaitanya turned to him and he said, okay, you showed that for my sake you ready to sacrifice even your reputation to break your vow, and you've broken your vow, you stepped out of Purushottam Kshetra. Now be satisfied with that and fulfill my desire. Go back and continue serving Tota Gopinath. And Gadadhar Pandit, even though he was broken hearted, but he went back and he served Tota Gopinath. So we can see all these amazing examples. And so our life is meant to serve these great souls. And by serving them, we have a chance to develop the type of Krishna consciousness, you know, they have, to be influenced by their Krishna consciousness. And this is their mercy. And Srila Prabhupada was mentioning that on these special occasions, on these special days, when of appearances or disappearances of these great souls, we can pray to them directly and we have a good chance to get their mercy. So whatever spiritual desires you have, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura and Srila Gadadhar Pandit can fulfill today. And also tomorrow we're starting, you know, is a very special month, which is called Purushottam month. This month is an extra month which comes only once in 4 years, and it's said that this month is so much more powerful spiritually that even Kartik, I don't know how many times, but I've heard like 1,000 times more powerful than Kartik. Anyway, it's much more powerful. And so basically this month is meant to increase our services to the Supreme Lord. I'm sure those of you who are interested, you can find a lot of information on the internet. Banu Maharaj prepared the whole explanation on how to follow Purushottam Vrata. And the spiritual benefits are unlimited. So those of you who can do so and would like to get special benedictions, tomorrow is the beginning of Purushottam month. Yes? Yeah. Purushottama yoga. Yeah. Yeah, it's recommended to do anything, to increase anything which is connected to Krishna and serving Krishna. Chanting Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, or reading Krishna book, or singing bhajans for Krishna. Banu Maharaj gives the whole list of, you know, things which can give special bonus during the Purushottam month.